As opposed to an explosive force, there were no shock waves to speak of in the camp. The workers present only heard the monster's scream and felt a pulse of energy from the western wall. Meanwhile, Asnod had a contemplative look on his face. He could instinctively understand what had been devoured by his energy, as it was one that was made to help him cook. Thus, he knew that he did not only catch one giant eel. Instead, he caught 30 of them, as well as various smaller monsters. Still holding his boxed meal, Parna rushed over in distress. "Is everything all right, sir?" he asked, having felt the surge of power. Upon arrival, the only hint of what had happened was the giant cut leading deep into the ice. "The immediate problem has been dealt with," Asnod said solemnly, rising to his feet. "However, I would suggest putting in an urgent request for fighters capable of battle in frozen environments. There are numerous monsters swimming within the ice, and some of them are certainly hostile." Parna's face went pale at that, and he nodded his head. "Yes, yes, I will do so immediately," he said, before turning and running off. Asnod crossed his arms over his chest, lost in thought. Now that he had noticed the problem, it would be irresponsible of him to leave before the reinforcements arrived. With a thought, he sent a message to O'Donna. "Sorry, I might not be able to make it home in time for dinner tonight," he said, before explaining the situation. O'Donna, although surprised, swiftly responded back. "That's all right. Just make sure that you take care of yourself as well. I would be surprised if there aren't monsters capable of killing gods and floors this high." Asnod was well aware of this, but he thanked her for the reminder regardless. He walked over towards the drill, noting that it was the most likely place to incur the wrath of these monsters. Hopefully it is equally effective at scaring them as it is getting their attention. With that thought in mind, Asnod sat, his knives at the ready. O'Donna let out a sigh of relief as she sat in the palace, having just finished her talk with Asnod. If anything, she was relieved that he was going to be in Fior for a little while. The reports about mimetic entities had arrived shortly before he left, and this would give him a reason to stay away from the danger for a little while as she took care of things. Granted, the danger was far lesser when it came to the core worlds, but the Goddess of Life was protective. Besides, there wasn't much that he'd be able to help with specifically when preparing for the new changes. In the back of her mind, O'Donna was more worried about how she would raise awareness and prepare others to deal with such mimetic entities. She had consulted with Cece and discovered that Codex Chaotic couldn't be used to simulate normal mimetic monsters, as that was outside of its parameters. There were only a few differences between mimetic monsters and void monsters, but those differences could still save lives. She pursed her lips, thinking about the problem. She placed her hand on her desk, creating a small book. She was also the goddess of education, so perhaps there were some things that she could prepare. Her eyes twitched as an idea came to her, and she abruptly sat up. "Terra. Stories, Terra, I mean. And Chelsea, are the two of you free?" she asked, a growing sense of excitement as her idea grew more and more. "Oh, yeah, I'm here," Terra's voice responded. "Not often I get a call from you, sis. What's up?" "I'm here, too," Chelsea said, sounding exhausted. "Sorry, I've been trying to come up with contingencies and backups for the contingencies, and it's just a mess." "Education, security, and stories," O'Donna sent the two of them, earning only a sense of confusion. "We could make educational guides that adapt to the situation. The stories domain provides the situation, the security domain analyzes the variables to determine the safest course of action, and the education domain helps to quickly impart that knowledge." There was a long pause before Chelsea spoke up. "That's not a bad idea. We'd have to do some tinkering, though. In a lot of situations, the safest course of action is to simply run faster than your friends. Let's try not to promote that type of content. What do we call it, though?" "The Goddess's Guide to Exploring the Galaxy," O'Donna suggested, but Chelsea immediately retorted. I feel like you're going to get sued if you go with that. Let's just go with the security manual. Chapter 72. When I heard about the so-called security manual, I had questions, to say the least. For starters, there couldn't be such a perfect manual that could account for any conceivable circumstance. Such a thing would be completely ridiculous, even if the person using it did need to take the time to read through it. Thus, I asked to be provided with one of the manuals upon their completion. Udana came to Olympus to personally deliver it to me as a proof of concept, offering a small smile on her face. The manual itself was small, being a booklet with only 50 pages. When I arched a brow, Udana explained, "These are meant to be consumable items. This reduces the divinity cost that I need to pay and prevents over-reliance." "You need to pay?" I blinked, looking up at Udana. I thought that this was a collaborative effort. "The prototype was," Udana said with that same smile. "Afterwards, the three of us agreed that I should be the one holding the patent, because I have the greatest reserve of divinity. Thus, I registered it with the digital conversion system, and can now independently print these books." That certainly made me less eager to immediately try it out. "How does it work, then?" I asked, handing the book back to her. "It's quite simple. Once you focus on activation, the first two pages are reserved for analyzing the situation via the story domain, looking at the current narrative of the user. Then the security domain further delves into the situation, providing a detailed analysis. For this reason, the first five pages are reserved for the situation breakdown. From there, the security and education domains work to provide a guide on how to overcome the crisis." I brought a hand up to my head, massaging my forehead. "First of all, can you explain how the security part works? If it uses the void to gather information, we might just be creating more problems for ourselves." Udana shook her head quickly. "No, nothing like that. Chelsea sealed a small part of her consciousness within the domain as she used it, containing her experience and insights into various matters, sort of like a database to reference. When the manual is activated, that consciousness awakens briefly." "That would certainly make it easier to cover a wide range of scenarios, as well as ones not planned for. Of course, it also meant that the book could have a new version released later, if Chelsea received any major enlightenments." "Okay. My only other concern is the concept of needing to read the book, since the time spent reading would cause most emergencies to already become critical." Udana beamed a proud smile when I said that. "Nothing to worry about there, either. Once the book has finished activating, a second activation automatically imparts all instructions to the user's mind. This is an optional feature, so that the manual can be passed around after activation to let other necessary personnel read through the instructions, if need be." "Right," I nodded. "I assume that this isn't going to be mass-produced. Even your divinity wouldn't be able to cope with that." Udana hesitated for a moment before seeming to agree with me. "While I would like it to be possible, the fact of the matter is that there is no need for this to be a household item. This manual isn't designed for daily use, and most people would never have need of it throughout their entire lives. Instead, I plan to provide it for free to commanders and military operations, such as ship captains exploring uncharted space. Additionally, I will make it available to purchase from the adventurers' guilds of any world, so those who often encounter unknown monsters will have access to it. The price will be expensive, but I don't expect to make my full investment back, considering that it will be provided for free to the military. This is just so that I can mitigate the losses slightly." I nodded my head, glad to see that she had thought it out. "Do you have anything else important to report?" I asked, curiously, to which Udana hesitated. "There is one other matter. Chelsea is seeking permission to begin world creation experiments in the void, working together with Ashley's team." I was admittedly surprised when I heard that, looking at Udana questioningly. "She wants to advance us towards the fifth rank already?" I knew that the proper creation of a world, without using the market, was the benchmark for the fifth rank. so I was surprised to hear that Chelsea was already contemplating it so soon after advancing to the fourth. Udana gave a small, knowing smile. She said that it's a necessary step to prepare for. Right now, the technology doesn't properly exist to create the world in the first place. At best, they've reverse-engineered the ability to make smaller bases. There will need to be several generations of devices in order to build a world at the same level as one from the system. I paused before ultimately agreeing to the request. This was something that we would need to do sooner or later, given the fact that Ragnarokr was planning to fight a keeper at the peak of rank 4 and had enough confidence in his victory to become enraged at us stopping him. Our success in defending against that invasion meant that our full combat power should be on the higher level of the fourth rank. Of course, there was still a lot we had to do. While the digital conversion system lived up to its worth as a 200,000-point system, you won't be able to use beta reality to do this, but as long as she doesn't cause any major problems, I don't see a reason to refuse. Back in the Another World Research Group's lab, Chelsea let out a soft sigh. She had already finished most of the preparations for her own energy fusion before having to leave to meet Dale and then deal with the mimetic monster, and then help with the creation of the security manual. Now that she was finally back to the lab and free of distraction, she was ready to take the final steps. The success rate in the simulations wasn't at 100% yet, but she doubted that she would be able to get it to that level without practical experimentation. She printed out the formula, jumping up from her seat and leaving the office to head towards her energy conversion chamber. Everyone in the lab had one such room, which could be used to assist in the production of complex energies. This was done in a similar way to how Chelsea created the Bone Wand, the Divine Ring, and other such treasures. Simply put, the formula laid out the process of the energy fusion, but did not rely on the digital conversion system. Instead, it merely mimicked the process of guiding the energy. Of course, there were numerous internal mechanisms that needed to be adjusted, depending on the guidance method. Once she got to her chamber, Chelsea pulled out her multi-tool, aiming it at the device and adjusting the internal components according to the formula's design. Once she was done with that, she fed the formula into the device and placed her hands on the input panels. Her eyes closed, and her world sight examined the fusion process, watching for any abnormalities. World sight was unique in that it wouldn't accidentally get mixed with other energy types during observation. Unless it was intentionally condensed, other forms of energy treated it as if it simply didn't exist. As Chelsea watched her experiment unfold, she could already spot small parts of the process that could be optimized. At these points, the reaction of the energy became more unstable before having to be forcibly stabilized. Doing this exhausted an excessive amount of energy and caused a delay in the conversion process. Thankfully, while smaller parts of the process had to forcibly be stabilized, the operation seemed to be a success. With a grin, Chelsea moved to a nearby terminal, making the necessary corrections that she had previously noted, and confirming the improved result. Once her energy was finalized, she needed to adjust her internal energy paths to accommodate it. This process wasn't difficult, as she had multiple spare cores from James's old Nine Tails project. With a thought, she purged one of the less useful energies from one of her tails, instead channeling this new energy into it. Chelsea was far too familiar with the process of connecting an energy core to her network, and soon her tail was naturally producing the energy that she had just created. However, when she was done, her brows furrowed. She realized that she hadn't gotten any form of achievement for the creation of this energy. "Is it possible that someone else beat me to it?" she asked, though found it unlikely. These achievements wouldn't be unique among keepers, so her only competition should have been Dale's worlds. Who would be able to create this, she thought, before blinking. Maybe I first need to use it? Although she had created the energy core in her tail, she hadn't properly tested the effects of the energy. Closing her eyes, she sensed its structure, visualizing the energy as long strips of beads. With a thought, she focused on splitting one such bead from the energy sequence, bringing it up to her hand. This singular point of energy was infinitesimally small, similar to a speck of dust floating above her finger. She focused on this point of energy, trying to pass her senses through it. When she did, she felt the minuscule bead light up, and she was able to observe the surroundings from that point of space. Even when she moved it to the corner of the room, she could still observe her body from the altered view. However, if it was like this, she wouldn't be able to set up the conditions that she wanted for how the energy needed to work. Instead, she brought the energy back to her hand and retrieved her senses from it. She brought up 5 more beads, forming a closed string of energy over her finger. This time, when she passed her senses through, still only 1 bead lit up. It took a moment for Chelsea to realize that each bead stored a singular command, with the strings between them serving to pass signals through. Once she noticed that, she grinned, setting up a slightly more complex network of interwoven beads. She placed this small network at the corner of the room and snapped her fingers. The moment she did so, she received a mental notification, as well as a shared view of herself from the perspective of the network. Congratulations! You have earned a new achievement. You have created a new saint-level energy. Please name this energy. Chelsea blinked, realizing that this particular combination was one that didn't currently exist on the market. With a small grin, she pondered over the name. I'll call it Integrated Security, or IS for short. For creating the saint-level energy, Integrated Security, you have obtained the Supernatural Innovator Achievement, plus 5% Wisdom. Chelsea seemed surprised that the reward was a percentage increase rather than a flat increase. Naturally, this made it far more valuable. Still, she needed to experiment more to understand the full scope of her new power. It was at that moment that Udana sent Chelsea a message, saying that the Keeper had approved of her request. She clenched her fist with a grin, retrieving the energy node that she had previously installed. She was going to be busy for a while now. Chapter 73. In truth, the concept of creating a universe was nothing new to Dale's world, though it was often regarded as an extremely unstable ability. As a prime example, Dana and Tsubaki had conducted numerous experiments where they were producing marbles capable of limitlessly generating energy. Those marbles themselves were a form of manufactured universe. Similarly, the mana-generating worlds within the void that were used for the improved energy cores followed a similar vein. There were 2 primary differences between these manufactured universes and what was required to achieve the 5th rank as a keeper. The first and foremost was the completeness. All of the universes that had been created thus far had been created with a very limited scope of rules. However, because of this, it was possible to create them purely with mana rather than needing to use more complex energies or even the void itself. The second difference was in stability. Worlds created via such simple means were very easy to destroy, their world barriers unable to take even an average fighter's strength within the void. On the other hand, a world created by the system was capable of blocking any but the most outrageous assaults. Chelsea may never have created such a world herself, but she had overseen some early research on the matter. And because this research happened within the world, as opposed to knowledge acquired via the system, she was able to retain this information in her current form. Treysha, Chelsea called out, allowing the lab's AI to transmit her voice to the elven assistant. Send a notice to the Ninja Nation. Let them know that we will be needing skilled laborers on an upcoming long-term project. You got us a new assignment? Treysha's voice spoke back in surprise. Are we dropping the energy research for the time being? Not exactly. Let the twins and James finish their work, and then they can join us. Until then, you and I will handle the technical side of this, and the ninjas can be in charge of the manual labor. Once you've sent the message, meet me in Lab 17. After Chelsea said this, she quickened her pace. There were hundreds of individual labs within the research facility. Most of them went unused, and some were still unfurnished. Every lab, once it was completed, had a special purpose assigned to it. Lab 17 was a lab dedicated to crafting within the void. For this reason, it was behind more than 10 layers of additional void shielding, simply to prevent any energy or entities from leaking out during experimentation. When Chelsea arrived at the entrance to the security zone, she found Tracia already waiting for them. Tracia seemed surprised, but waited for Chelsea to unlock the lab's security. This was one of the few labs that allowed absolutely no surveillance and no communication to the rest of the facility. Furthermore, the only ones capable of opening the security from either side were Chelsea and James.
"So, what's the project? Creating some new material in the void, like a super metal, or something like the Black Stone?"
Tracia asked, curiously, though Chell shook her head.
"Unfortunately, it's impossible to get a clear enough scan of the Black Stone of Fior to reverse engineer its creation. From what I can tell, it might not even be made of matter, but rather a solidified energy. But no, we're starting on a bigger project today," she said with a small grin, walking over to the holographic display. Pulling out her multi-tool, she used it like a pen to write on the display panel. "Currently, we have mastered the method of automatically converting the void to each of the four energy types. Furthermore, we know how to do various types of energy fusion purely with the digital conversion system." Tracia arched a brow before widening her eyes when she saw that Chelsea had written the words Universe Genesis Project on the display.
"You want to achieve a stable Genesis? Are we even ready for that?"
"Not even slightly," Chelsea shook her head, confirming Tracia's concerns. "However, we need to work on it regardless. Theoretically, we have all of the fundamental knowledge at our disposal. All that's left is to develop the machinery and the precise techniques to implement that knowledge."
Tracia hesitated slightly, finally understanding why Chelsea had chosen this lab.
"Where do you want to begin?" she asked,
Chelsea smiling at the question.
"Originally, I knew that worlds could only achieve true stability through the balance of the four pillar energies, being ki, mana, spirit, and nature. Once these energies were created in the void and fused together through the proper techniques, it should result in the creation of a primitive world. At least that was the assumption that I used to have."
Tracia blinked in confusion, having read the research reports from Tsubaki and Dana's old experiments.
"Isn't that the case?"
"Not at all," Chelsea sighed, leaning against a counter. "It wasn't until I came to this world and learned about Fior that I realized the true form that the pillar energies needed to take."
"What about Fior?"
Tracia felt like her head was buzzing, struggling to keep up with the energetic kitsune.
"Within Fior, each of the primary energies has its own realm. This realm exists outside of the known boundaries of the world, but could also be said to be at its core."
Chelsea smiled as she drew four circles on the board, and then a larger one around them.
"According to my theory, every universe should have something similar. The only reason we found it on Fior is because of its unique properties that gave birth to an ore capable of connecting there."
"So, according to this theory, we need to create these micro-realms first?"
Tracia asked, feeling like she was starting to catch up.
"Exactly! I call them mini-verse, for simplicity's sake. These mini-verses need to have a complete law sequence to become stable, and these laws must be compatible with each other. For instance, the laws in Fior's mana realm originally only contained runes. Upon the merging of laws with the Earth system, it began to store other information, such as geometric patterns or familiars." When Tracia heard this, she felt like she had run into another major roadblock.
"But if that is the case, how do we create a magic system that exceeds our own understanding?"
Although the very boundary of the fifth tier of magic had been touched, any magic scholar knew that there was far more left to explore within the realms of magic. Chelsea actually hesitated when she heard that,
crossing her arms in front of herself. That's a good point. They can't expect a keeper at the fourth or fifth rank to be able to replicate the completeness of a seventh-tier magic system. Muttering to herself, she began pacing back and forth in the room, her hand holding her chin in thought. There are two primary options that I can think of. The first is that the only thing needed to create the miniverse is the seed of the magic system. For instance, you wouldn't need to create anything that the magic could do, but only the equivalent of the first or second tier. Then, sealing that into a conceptual seed, it could be used as the foundation for the magical laws. If that is the answer, it's likely that the void takes that seed and expands upon it to its limit automatically.
What's the other option?
Tracia asked, watching Chelsea pace back and forth, over and over again. The other option is that the miniverse has to be updated for each tier of magic. Chelsea furrowed her brows as she said that.
For instance, it could start with the first tier as the base, but in order for more complicated magic to be possible within that universe, someone has to edit the magical laws within the miniverse. The problem is that there is evidence to support both of these claims. The fact that laws can merge between worlds shows that it is possible, at least at a system level, to edit the magical laws. However, the requirement for advancement is to create a world that is equally as stable as the ones created by the system. If an incomplete magical law is used, the stability should decrease accordingly.
Tracia closed her eyes, seeming to think things over. She crossed her arms over her chest, brows furrowing, before suddenly blinking.
It's the second option. I'd be willing to bet my salary on it.
I pay you?
Chelsea asked in mock surprise, turning to look at Tracia.
What makes you think it's the second?
Deccan, she said in a firm tone.
According to your first theory, the magic system should complete all the way to the limit from the creation of the world. For Deccan, that would imply that the highest-grade magic card should be available from the beginning. Instead, only the first-tier cards were available at first, and others became available incrementally over time. From what you said, this could only happen if the laws were being edited to include the later tiers.
Chelsea paused, eyes wide.
She had to consider the possibility that Fior was a special world. After all, in other worlds it was possible to achieve a higher level of magic without the Keeper having to buy it. Only Deccan held such a restriction, due to the nature of its magic. Still, this seemed to be an important piece of evidence. Perhaps the system automatically creates most worlds with a complete magic system. However, because the system in Deccan allows magic to be dropped by killing beasts, it imposed this limit to allow the world to develop as a safety mechanism, she mused.
However, even if that's the case, that means that there needs to be some method of accessing the miniverse of an already established world by mortal means. Furthermore, these magical laws have to be edited without causing damage to the world itself.
It seemed like something had lit up within Chelsea's eyes, and she drew an X in one of the circles that she had drawn previously.
I need one of each elemental stone from Fior, as well as the key magic and spirit stones. Our first step of the project will be to explore the miniverse and understand its fundamental structure.
Tracia nodded her head, making a mental note of the requirements. She walked towards the door of the lab, waiting for Chelsea to open the security field and let her out.
The spirit stones may be a challenge, since they come from a rather high floor. However, I should be able to get the others by the end of the day.
That's fine, Chelsea beamed, running over and verifying her information to open the security gates.
While you're gone, I'll go ahead and get started on some scanning equipment to analyze the samples.
It looks like we might not be ready for Lab 17 yet. We'll move to Lab 23 when you get back.
Tracia blinked before nodding her head. While Lab 17 was designed to conduct void crafting experiments, having numerous layers of shielding to prevent anything from getting out, Lab 23 was the opposite. In some ways, it was a bunker, sealed with barriers designed to make access to the void within it theoretically impossible. Though, these miniverses should exist within the current realm, so it might be for the best.
Chapter 74
The appearance of the mimetic monsters was really quite annoying for me, personally. I sat in the living room of Olympus thinking where I should go for training now. Typically, I would just go somewhere in deep space where I could release my power without worries. Otherwise, it would be easy for me to destroy whatever planet I was training on. But how do I do that when the things I need to worry about now come from deep space? Normal monsters wouldn't bother me in the slightest. Even if a monster god came along, I could destroy it without much concern. Mimetic monsters, though. For all I knew, destroying it could be what causes the mimetic monster to unleash its effect. Currently, my only options to train were either create an entirely new world for myself, or accept the possibility that my host could be destroyed because of simple bad luck. If my host was destroyed, that meant that Clover Keir would vanish, the planet on which Olympus was located would vanish, and I would lose my illusion domain. None of these things were something I particularly wanted to get rid of. Sure, it would be possible for me to recover my domain through other methods. However, if the planet for Olympus was destroyed, that would cause a lot of chaos in the world. Additionally, if Clover died... Well, even if I wasn't in frequent contact with that side of things, I didn't want to cause something like that. I could do all of my training in the admin room, like I used to do a long time ago. However, the reason that I stopped doing that was because of the special protections that the admin room had in place. For instance, my energy never running low. I can't properly assess how powerful my abilities are if I can't measure how much of my power they consume. At the same time, I could obviously not just give up on my training. Even if I didn't get into many fights, those times when I did were rather crucial to the survival of the worlds. Closing my eyes, I focused, thinking. Leowen, I called out mentally, and the silver-haired elf immediately appeared in front of me. You cold? She asked, with a sweet smile, causing me to blink. Didn't expect you to come in person, I chuckled, but smiled and pat the seat next to me for her. I was just thinking, would you be able to make something for me? I don't know if it's possible, but I need an early warning alarm when I'm out training, so I can get away from mimetic threats. Since mimetic powers use the void, I thought that might be your area of expertise. Leowen moved over to sit next to me, thinking, while I would like to help, I don't think that is something that I can cover with my domain, she told me, catching me off guard. Although memes typically use the void, these monsters don't come from the void. The best that I would be able to do is make something that tells you when a mimetic effect is being used in your vicinity. However, that would only register once something had been hit by the effect, so it would be a bit too late at that point to leave the area. Right. I nodded my head, falling silent for a moment before thinking of an alternative. What about Tower? He and the slimes made it through V-Day, right? Leowen nodded her head. They are part of the Hyperlane network, though travel to that sector is largely restricted according to his wishes. He might be able to make something like that. Given her tone, I could sense that she wasn't at all confident in her answer. I sense a pair of boneheads, a voice spoke up from behind us, seeming to startle even Tsubaki, who was standing not far away. Turning, I saw Aurevi standing there with her hands on her hips. Does that mean that you have an answer? I asked, thinking. Sure, she could make an automatic teleport device or something. I just didn't know if that would work for mimetic beings, or if they would be able to follow it back to the destination. You're talking about consulting a dungeon for your problem, and you didn't even consider the goddess of dungeons? It took me a moment to recognize that that was indeed one of her domains. I so often associated Aurevi with love and travel that it was easy to forget that. Her dungeons really didn't make sense together, and I wanted to smack the guy that gave them to her. You want me to train in a dungeon? I asked, brow furrowed. Wouldn't a dungeon be destroyed if I used my full power in it? And what's to stop monsters from getting in? Well, duh. Aurevi rolled her eyes, before extending a hand and creating a small golden sphere. If I use a normal dungeon, it's all totally valid. As if to demonstrate, she grinned, causing the sphere to light up. I felt a small shift in the space around me, but everything seemed to be normal.
"What did you do?"
I asked, looking around to try to find the inevitable change.
"This is something that I've had on a shelf for about 200 years now,"
Aurevi said with an uncertain tilt of her head.
"It's an instance generator. Basically, it copies the dungeon core's ability to create independent spaces. I was thinking about converting it into a super storage device, but Ashley's got the inventory system set up already. Anyways, once you activate this, any creatures around the sphere will be sent into an instanced area that mirrors the real world in all regards, aside from having a lack of life. Making life forms would have made this way too expensive, so I had to give up on that and just plan to install multiple mini-dungeons that would automatically generate. That ended up not going anywhere, so I shelved the project.
Regardless, if you use this, you'll be in a completely isolated space where you can train, just so long as you don't destroy this core," she said, as she tossed the core to me, forcing me to hurry and catch it.
"Right. Is there any kind of entrance left behind where you enter? I know dungeons have to have an opening."
When I asked that, Aurevi blinked.
"Well, not really. I mean, there is something, but I wouldn't call it an entrance. There's a small golden token left hovering behind at the point where you enter, but that's just to serve as a do-not-disturb sign. Technically, you don't even need to come out of the instance at the same point you enter. Because the instance reflects the universe it's used in, you can come and go from any location you can physically reach. Travel domain is nice, right?"
My eyes widened when she said that, looking at the golden orb in my hands.
You realize that you made the ultimate burglary tool, right?" I asked, causing Aurevi to giggle.
"Why do you think I never released it? There are way too many ways to take advantage of something like this. I already have enough trouble keeping tabs on other gods with similar domains that try to abuse their power. Just last week, someone tried to break into Traveler using their divine powers, so I had to educate them."
"Don't focus on what horrors that poor soul had to go through," I thought to myself, swiftly changing the subject.
"Traveler's still around? I was worried he would have been destroyed on V-Day."
"Hmm? Oh, no, Traveler's fine. The world that got hit hard with tech was Deccan, and he was over in Kion at the time. Kion's apocalypse didn't really have anything that could hurt him, so he mostly just ignored the whole thing."
I nodded my head in satisfaction, focusing on deactivating the core that Aurevi gave me.
"Just checking, but how many of these do you have? And do they all lead to the same instanced space?"
Aurevi blinked at the question before shaking her head.
"I can make however many I want, but no, each one leads to its own space. I never managed to crack the persistence feature, so the instance collapses when you exit it, removing any foreign entity still inside. That's another reason that it failed to work as an inventory." I gave another nod, sweeping my world sight over the sphere. There was an incredibly complex series of interconnected energy pathways within it that I couldn't decipher.
"In that case, my last question would be whether or not it is safe to have it in my inventory while it is active. If I can't, it might just break from the bursts of power I release during training."
"Oh, don't worry about that," Aurevi grinned. "It still works just fine. I was feeling especially vindictive at one point, and used a system sphere to give an energy-based monster an inventory, then stuck it and some guy in an instance together. Put the sphere in the monster's inventory, teleported it to a random planet in the universe, and told the guy to have fun. Since the instance is still a part of this world, he can't use void travel to escape without one of Chell's tokens."
She seemed proud of herself, but I had the feeling that this was the same guy that tried to break into Traveler. A shiver ran down my spine, trying to imagine how difficult it would be to find a single monster in an entire universe. If he was trying to break into Traveler, he had to have some kind of power related to transportation. But that was still a lot of places to check. I'd sooner expect the monster to die by natural causes than be found.
Right. So, what you're saying ultimately is that I can just use this to train,
and I won't have to worry about any collateral damage? Nothing done in this instance would reflect back onto the real world?
Exactly!
She nodded her head with that same happy grin. I couldn't help but reach out and pat her head, and she chuckled. This halfling could be incredibly cruel when someone upset her, but most of the time she was just adorable.
Anything else you need while I'm here? She asked, her hands behind her back.
No, that should be good. I'll let you get back to Julia. I smiled, shaking my head. Thanks for this. And let her know that I said hi. Also, let her know that I'm thinking about seeing if Ashley or Tubrock can set it up so Olympus enjoys the farming system from Lorik. I'm sure she'd be able to enjoy that. Aurevi blinked at that before nodding her head.
Sure thing. I don't know if she'll want to come live here, but I know she'll appreciate it.
After she said that, she vanished in a burst of golden mist. Leowyn and Tsubaki both turned to look at the golden orb in my hands. Leowyn looked rather thoughtful, offering a small smile.
There weren't any void fluctuations when it activated, so it should be safe to use. Just to be certain, I'd like to go with you when you test it out, she said,
and Tsubaki quickly nodded her head. Naturally, I had expected Tsubaki to want to join me. Going out into space wasn't safe anymore, even for me, so she would, of course, accompany me. Leowyn asking did surprise me, however. Sure, I ultimately nodded my head. In that case, shall we go? I'd like to test this out as soon as I can. Leowyn nodded her head. Her eyes briefly went black before the three of us vanished from the living room, reappearing on a desolate planet.
This should be a good spot to start, she said, with a warm smile, Tsubaki's senses sweeping over the area before giving a small nod of approval.
Shaking my head, I simply activated the core with my divinity. My eyes widened slightly at how much energy it cost to activate, and I understood why this was one of Aurevi's failed projects. It wasn't at all practical for any of the reasons she designed it. Thankfully, I had enough divine income to handle the energy consumption. Chapter 75. I spent roughly 6 hours training within the instance space, going in and out of it multiple times just to confirm that there was no transfer of damage between it and reality. The more I did so, the more Tsubaki seemed to become enamored with the device that Aurevi had given me. It was to the point that I had to mentally message Aurevi to ask her to send one of those to Tsubaki's room while we were gone. However, as I trained my various domains, I had something nagging at the back of my mind, a thought that just wouldn't go away. After leaving the instance one last time, I sent a message to Terra. Are you free at the moment?
Always, Dale, she replied in a playful tone. What do you need?
There's something that I feel like is long overdue, and I want to ask if it is at all possible. There was a moment of hesitation before she spoke again.
If this is about permanently combining my incarnations, like Chelsea's assistants...
Huh? I blinked, momentarily taken aback. No, nothing like that. I figured that that wouldn't be possible until we found the proper way to create an origin. I want to ask about fixing Clover.
Clover?
The split avatar of yourself that you made way back? What's wrong with him? This time it was my turn to pause briefly, considering my words. I want to completely separate him from me. That way, even if this body dies while I'm in the admin room, nothing will happen to him. The main tether connecting the two of us is the soul, so I thought that I should be able to completely recreate his soul with my domain, removing the connection.
I see. So that was what you meant.
Terra seemed to be nodding her head, going by the sensation I got from her.
You just want to confirm whether or not it will work?
That's right. You know stuff like this the best, so I thought you'd be able to tell. It also doesn't feel like it would be outside of the realm of knowledge you can give me.
No. You're right, she replied quickly. This is something easy for me to answer. It's been centuries since you had the power to do this, after all. There are even other people that do similar things in your world, creating avatars and then using various methods to build them a unique soul.
The main question for you is whether or not doing so would still list him as part of the Keeper, which is something that wouldn't apply to others to begin with. I can confidently say that, as long as you completely remove every trace of his original soul, you will be able to sever the connection between the two of you. I let out a sigh of relief when I heard that. Good. The only other thing to worry about if my host body dies would be making sure that Olympus wouldn't self-destruct, given that it is my reserve of divine energy in the shape of a planet. Terra responded with an almost annoyed tone. Is it really necessary to think so much about your body being destroyed? Yes, yes, it is, I nodded sagely. With all of the memetic monsters appearing, the threat is greater than ever before. I'm confident that you would pull me to the admin room if I was in true danger, but that wouldn't save my host. Terra let out a long sigh. You don't have to worry about Olympus. A battery won't shatter just because the power goes out. It would just wait there as an ownerless mass of divinity. Plenty of time for you to reclaim it. A bunch of gods make reserve batteries, but many of them are still around, even when the god themselves are killed. I blinked at that realization. In that case, I just need to take care of Clover and move all of my domain books out of my shadow world. I gave a small smile when I realized that. Aurevi, can I get you to take me somewhere? Steam filled the room as Lydia stepped out of the shower, the energy around her body rippling and forming her uniform. Her and Clover had joined the exploratory voyages venturing into deep space. Although neither of them were gods, they possessed exceptional combat power and were thus welcome to join. When she left the room, she saw Clover sitting at the desk in their shared room, a smile on her lips. She walked over behind him, about to say something, when both of them suddenly stiffened, feeling a new presence entering the room. Turning, the duo saw golden mist spreading in the room, revealing the form of the Keeper. It had been quite a long time since the Keeper had met with the two of them, and he seemed surprised to see them in uniforms. The duo quickly stood upright and facing him, offering a trained salute. "Sir," the two of them said in unison, causing the Keeper to wave his hand for them to calm down. "You can be at ease," he said with a smile. "It's been a long time." He looked at both Lydia and Clover as he said that. "I didn't expect to find the two of you on a ship like this." Lydia gave a somewhat bitter smile at that. "We might not be for long. We just arrived at the designated gathering point, and were told that our voyage has been suspended, pending an investigation and improvement in critical infrastructure." The Keeper nodded his head. "Memetic monsters have been discovered in deep space, and it is suspected that they will become increasingly more numerous as time passes. To counter this, we are putting new policies in place to protect the crew of these voyages. However, that's not why I've come here." The two looked at the Keeper in confusion, before he continued to elaborate. "I've come to resolve the threat to Clover. This body of mine is no more than a host that I created many, many years ago. If my true body dies, it is equivalent to the death of all worlds. However, if this body dies while I am not occupying it, there is no such problem. Instead, only things which are directly linked to this body would perish." Lydia nodded her head, clearly already aware of all of this. "Meaning Clover." He explained what it meant for you to be the Keeper a long time ago. "What do you mean that you will resolve the threat, though?" The Keeper offered her a small smile. "Right now, it is Clover's soul that is tied to this body. With my current power, I have the ability to completely sever this connection by forging for him a new soul. It will be identical in every way to how he is now, with the exception that he will no longer be tied to the existence of this body." Clover's eyes widened when he heard that, and Lydia looked at him in surprise, before turning to face the Keeper again. "What do you have to do?" she asked, vigilantly, feeling that nothing so good could come easily. "I have to reforge his soul," the Keeper said in a serious tone. "I can't guarantee that this won't hurt, but I will try to make it as simple and painless as I can. Once his soul has been reforged, there will no longer be any direct connection between the two of us. Lydia looked at Clover once again, clearly seeking his opinion. Clover nodded her head, turning to look at the keeper.
Do you want to do this here, or do we need to go somewhere else?
The keeper shook his head, walking over to Clover.
I don't think I should need to say this, but just try not to resist, he said, as he closed his eyes, placing one hand on Clover's shoulder.
Lydia took a step back, making sure that she wasn't in the way for what was about to transpire. She saw specks of silver light appear all around Clover, weaving together to form a crystalline sphere. Then she bit her lips, seeing a faint look of pain on Clover's face as a matching sphere was extracted from his chest. Connected to it were thin strips of blue and red lights that trailed back into Clover's body. The keeper moved the orb he had created into the path of these lights, letting them latch onto it instead. While doing so, a look of concentration appeared, both brows furrowing. Not a word was said throughout the entire process, but Lydia could see the faint glow of divinity in the keeper's hands. Once the last of the lights transferred from Clover's original soul to the newly created one, the keeper let it slowly float back into his body. At that time, Clover no longer looked to be in pain, but rather had an expression of relief. Meanwhile, the keeper looked at the soul that had been extracted and seemed to absorb it back into himself. Everything should be properly copied now, the keeper said with a smile. Just to make sure, I'll go and wait in the next room over, and the two of you can talk amongst yourselves. Make sure that there aren't any abnormalities with his personality or memories. The keeper didn't wait for the two of them to respond, simply moving to the nearby door and leaving the room. Once he was gone, Lydia turned to look at Clover once again.
Are you all right?
She asked, chewing on her lip in worry. Clover blinked, turning to face her.
I'm sorry.
Who are you? He asked, causing Lydia's eyes to go wide, mouth hanging open. Just as she was about to run after the keeper, Clover smirked.
I'm kidding, Lyd. I'm fine. And probably better than ever. I feel like I'm just me now.
Lydia paused before lightly bringing her fists down against Clover's chest.
Idiot! Don't scare me like that. I thought that he wiped your memories or something.
Clover let out a light laugh, reaching out to pull Lydia in for a tight hug.
Sorry, it's me, he whispered,
and Lydia's tail began to wag faster and faster behind her, a look of delight on her face.
So, you really don't have a connection to the Keeper anymore?
She asked to confirm, to which Clover shook his head.
There's nothing. I've still got my familiar, but there aren't any other connections in my soul. Though this does mean I don't get to freeload off of the Digital Conversion System Authority anymore, he teased, to which Lydia chuckled. You always hated the idea of doing that anyways, so no change there, she said, leaning into his chest.
We should really let him know that it worked.
Yeah, we should,
Clover agreed, though it was clear that neither of them had any intention of moving. Outside of the room, the keeper had a small smile on his face, sensing what was going on inside. With a thought, he called out to a certain goddess in his mind, golden mist wrapping around his form, to carry him away from the ship. Chapter 76. With Clover's matter taken care of, all that was left now was to remove the domain tomes from my shadow world. Regardless of whether or not Olympus survived the death of my host, I knew that my shadow world would not. After all, it was simply the embodiment of an energy core that was stored within me. Thus, I would need to reclaim Earth's shadow again when I created my next host. This operation couldn't be simpler, as I only needed to change where new books would appear to a library within my Palace of Olympus and stock its shelves with the existing tomes. In doing so, I had essentially removed everything that shackled me to this host, with the exception of my illusion domain. I wasn't too concerned about that, however,
as I could easily retrain the domain. In fact, with my current powers, I might be able to ascend to godhood through Lorik's system in a single week. In my mind, the only reason not to get rid of the host was to preserve the Shadow World, which would be annoying to remake every time I descended. Still, at least I was prepared in the event that something did happen, regardless of whether I intended to cause it to do so myself.
"Ah, Priscilla, you've returned!"
A young man greeted Priscilla as she arrived at the outskirts of a distant village of Deccan, one that had been constructed after the events of V-Day.
"I wish you would have given us more of a notice. We could have prepared a decent meal for you."
"That's fine." Priscilla shook her head with a smile. The boy opposite of her had short black hair and green eyes.
"It's good to see you again, Simon. I trust that all is well with the village."
The young man, Simon, nodded his head while beating one fist against his chest.
"Thanks to your help last time, there haven't been any problems. That's why I was so surprised to hear that you were coming.
There's not some great monster nearby or something, right?"
he asked, adopting a nervous tone at the end.
Thankfully, Priscilla shook her head.
"Nothing of the sort. I actually came here to speak with you. The Keeper has given me a mission to seek out worthy individuals, and I believe that you would be the perfect person for this task."
Simon's eyes widened, his body going ramrod straight as he adopted a more respectful tone. The mention of the Keeper had made his demeanor immediately shift from that of talking to an old friend and savior to speaking with someone of an incredibly high office.
"What task would you ask of me, priestess?"
Priscilla simply smiled at the change of demeanor. She didn't particularly like or dislike such things, and knew that it was only natural, given her standing.
"In deep space, there have been monsters born from the lingering essence of the void. These monsters possess mimetic abilities and may become serious threats in the future. As I recall, you mentioned before that you were quite proficient when it came to Codex Chaotic."
Simon nodded his head seriously before looking somewhat confused.
"The Keeper wishes to hire consultants to deal with mimetic threats?
There is a difference between memes and void entities, but I can't say that they are unrelated." However, Priscilla denied this idea.
"He does not seek consultants.
Hiring a consultant to accompany every vessel would spread his efforts too thin. Let those ships hire their own specialists. What he seeks is someone who will help resolve problems that have already occurred."
A look of understanding flashed across Simon's face at that, before he looked faintly troubled.
"I'm afraid you may have wasted your trip, priestess. I am confident that I can identify the effects of memes with enough study, but doing so would infect me with them, and I do not possess the skill to construct anti-memes."
"That is of no consequence. Such a skill can be trained," Priscilla explained, stepping forward and placing a hand on Simon's shoulder with a gentle look. "My task is not merely to choose capable individuals, but also to bestow them the power to act in his name. Those who accept the task shall become as I am, a priest of the Keeper."
"The Keeper asked of me only one condition, and left the rest to my discretion. This condition was that the chosen must be a devout follower of at least 4 members of the Greater Pantheon. As I recall, you follow Udana, Leowyn, Rion, Aravi, and Trival."
"That's correct," Simon confirmed, not questioning Priscilla's decision.
His mind was racing with the information that had just been revealed. As someone that studied void beasts through Codex Chaotic, he had to be able to handle information rapidly. Still, this was too unexpected, so it took him a moment to catch up. Priscilla seemed rather patient, simply watching him and awaiting his answer. After a moment, Simon let out a deep breath, nodding his head.
"What would you have me do, priestess?"
Priscilla shook her head.
"It's not I, but the Keeper. Once you have this power, you will need to head to one of the space docks currently under construction. The goddess Aravi will guide you to your destination. From there, you should begin to create the divine powers that would be most useful to your work. As the Keeper's chosen priest,
you will be able to create one divine ability from every domain that exists in the world. Simon's eyes widened once again.
The goddess? I cannot trouble her with such a matter. It is enough for me to commission a ship to take me to my destination.
If she says you can do it, you can do it, a voice spoke up from next to the duo.
Simon turned and almost jumped out of his skin when he saw none other than Auravi herself standing there, her hands on her hips.
You think you can be the Keeper's priest when you're afraid to ask for help?
I'm sorry. Please forgive my rudeness, Simon said, quickly bowing to the halfling goddess.
Nearby, Priscilla smiled, knowingly, having gone through a similar ordeal herself only recently. It had taken her a few days to get used to having the members of the Greater Pantheon treat her closely, somewhere between friendship and respect. She even thought that she had adjusted remarkably fast.
Auravi puffed out her cheeks, glancing towards Priscilla before turning her gaze to Simon again.
So, are you going to accept the job? You've probably figured it out by now, but this isn't an easy assignment. It's also not safe. And you will have to bear the burden of knowing that everyone's lives could rest on your actions.
Simon hesitated briefly, turning to look back at the village, where people were walking around casually, going about their day, unaware of the two very important guests standing just outside. Simon himself had few attachments to this place, as his family had mostly passed away. Until recently he had made his living as a farmer, but turned to Codex Chaotic when the ability to earn money from the game was released. Unfortunately, spending most of his time in Codex Chaotic only further distanced himself from the villagers, most of whom he hadn't seen in over a week. Those he did see more regularly were shopkeepers that he had to buy groceries from, and didn't have a personal relationship with them. He turned back to face Priscilla and Auravi, bowing deeply.
If my ability can be of help to others, then I should do so with all of my heart.
Auravi smirked at that answer, nodding towards Priscilla to show her approval. With that, Priscilla placed one hand over her chest.
By the Keeper's authority, vested within me, I ask of you, Simon Noel, do you accept the responsibility of this power?
I accept.
Simon nodded his head as well. He felt a surge of power within him, his eyes widening at the notification that he had become the Keeper's priest. Priscilla turned towards Auravi, offering a small bow.
Would you mind taking him to a perfection clinic first? Simon still has a mortal body, so I'm afraid that this task will be too difficult for him before he has shed his physical form.
Auravi shrugged her shoulders with a grin.
One extra stop won't hurt anything. Speaking of which, I can take you to your next destination, too.
Priscilla smiled thankfully, but shook her head.
I possess the ability to travel on my own, so that's not needed. However, if you can arrange for me to receive a token to travel the void, that would make recruiting those of other realms easier.
Auravi thought about it for a moment before nodding her head.
Sure, that's no problem. I'll get the team to set you up with one before you finish recruiting the next guy on your list. Anything else before I take the new guy to get his upgrade?
Priscilla closed her eyes in thought.
If it is possible, could you give me a list of the top 100 rankers within Codex Chaotic that are devout followers of four or more of you? If you can highlight some exceptional members, that would be wonderful.
Auravi's smile turned into a full grin.
Now you're starting to get the idea. We already set the list up, just waiting for you to ask for it. Though it's not specific to Codex Chaotic, but anyone who meets the requirements. I'll have Cece sort them by ranking and send it to your terminal.
Priscilla blinked in surprise, discovering that the Greater Pantheon had already taken an interest in her mission, and even prepared to help her in advance.
Thank you very much, then, she said. I won't keep you. The sooner I finish, the sooner you can return home. We wouldn't want Julia to worry.
Auravi laughed, tilting her head back.
Right. I'll be off, then. Let me know when you've got the next one ready, and I'll grab him, too.
After she said that, she disappeared with a surprised Simon, while Priscilla remained near the village's gate.
She thought to herself, going through her memories to try and decide on a good candidate for the next recruitment. Simon had been an easy choice for her, because he met every condition that the Keeper had set perfectly. However, there were not many people with such qualifications, at least not many that she knew about. She turned around, starting to walk away from the village, when her terminal vibrated in her pocket, notifying her of an incoming message. Blinking at the speed of the message, she retrieved her terminal and activated its holographic screen, seeing the list of people prepared by the gods. Not only was their Codex Chaotic rank listed, but there were notes about personality and training. Seeing just how much effort had gone into this list, which encompassed every realm, Priscilla felt her cheeks turn rosy. It had not been that long since the mission was given, and yet they already had such extensive preparations. This would certainly make her job easier. Priscilla filtered the list to only show those in Deccan, finding more than a dozen names listed. Among them were three high-ranking players of Codex Chaotic. She was unsurprised to see Simon's name among the three, looking at the information of the other two. One of them was only a teenager, who pursued Codex Chaotic for fun, but had a rather high level as both a scholar and mage. Ashley left a note on his entry that he would be an ideal candidate, if only he was a few years older. The other was a woman who had lost her family during V-Day, because they had stubbornly refused to evacuate to Fior. She had been studying anything related to the Void ever since, whether it was the Void beasts, memes, or even anti-memes. Seeing the high praise that Leowyn noted for this individual, Priscilla made the easy decision to select her as the next candidate. Chapter 77. After the proper measures had been taken to defend against memetic entities, the days began to pass rather calmly. While I did my training in the instanced World Core that Aurevi gave me, the others were all working on their own projects. Chelsea was studying the creation of a new world, while Ashley was working on her next game. The game that she had chosen to produce this time could be called more of a sandbox, akin to the game that Dana had designed a long time ago, or World Seed. In this game, there would be no NPCs, and the development of the world was left entirely to the players. However, there was one system that Ashley wanted for the game that caught me by surprise. The game that she was creating used a cultivation system, but one that was integrated into the game's main level system. The system was called Skill Master, and awarded participants skill points as they leveled up or trained themselves. They could spend these skill points towards a domain of their choice, designing the skills that they wanted, so that the system could assign a price according to the compatibility with the skill tree and its complexity. Once they had spent a certain number of skills in a single skill tree, they would unlock a skill option called Apotheosis. Buying this skill would allow them to become a deity with their skill tree as their domain. When Ashley told me about the system, I had habitually looked it up, noticing that its price was a full 10,000 points. Ashley assured me that it was fine, because aside from this system, the only other system that she would be purchasing for the game was a dungeon system to provide players with ample targets. Moreover, the dungeon system was only 1,000 points. Taking into account the packaging fees, that brought the estimated price game to a total of 15,000. This was vastly cheaper than Fragments of Acidia, which had gone for almost 90,000 points in total. I asked her if she had a good enough crafting system and other supplementary systems to help flesh out the game, and she assured me that she had taken care of that. By packaging the item files of digital conversion as crafting recipes, following the crafting add-on that they had previously installed, they wrote a much weaker version of this system. Like this, they were able to save on the cost of getting a new crafting system from the market. Once they had all of the code put together, the game would be ready to publish. Unlike World Seed, this was a game that held the capacity to produce gods,
at least when combined with the technology to synchronize the real user with their game account. After Ashley explained the concept of the game to me, as well as the systems involved, I briefly returned to the admin room and opened up my chat. Sarah and the others had all been a big help when it came to advertising my last game. It was likely thanks to them that a total of 30 keepers had bought World Seed so far, giving Ashley enough points to begin production of another title. Earth Force One. How's it going? Everlasting. Hey, did you hear? Earth Force One. Hear what? Ariel.
Corona was defeated in this month's game.
When I saw that message, my eyes went wide in surprise. I had never spoken with Corona before, and only knew that she was a female keeper that had been forced to reset at one point. She was only at the first rank when I joined the guild, but sure enough, she was no longer listed as a member of the guild. Earth Force One. I'm sorry, I hadn't realized. Do you have any plans? Everlasting. There's not much that we can do. Her opponent was a keeper at the third rank, and we don't have anyone at that level. The best that I can do is put out a bounty. Earth Force One.